A few weeks back, I did a two-part episode about a one-month adventure in 1952 on the Good News River by a couple of guys working for the U.S. Geological Survey. Their story, as told by a then-college kid named Ted Konigsmark, fascinated me for several reasons, one of which was the consideration of all they were able to accomplish without the types of modern gear many of us take for granted today. For myself, the idea of a month on any of our area's rivers is enough to contemplate on its own without factoring in how I'd get by without any number of gear items that I consider critical, like my neoprene boots, Leatherman, quick-dry nylon pants, thermocell, lightweight tent, and rain jacket, just to name a few things. No, a trip of any length is, in my opinion, much easier to pull off now, with our technology, than it was in 1952, and yet, to consider Ted's account, they did just fine and had a memorable trip to boot. Still, there is little doubt that technological advances have almost always made any outdoor pursuit better than it was before, and it's quite likely it'll continue to trend in that direction. So what's the history behind some of those items, especially those that are prolific around our area? Welcome to Bristol Bay Field Notes. I'm Terry Fuller, Education Specialist for Togiak National Wildlife Refuge. Let's start with that Leatherman I mentioned. I can't imagine life without mine. I'm very fond of it. I've had a number of them through the years, but my current one is my favorite, and the one that I've had the longest. Specifically, it's a Leatherman Super Tool, and an older model at that. It's larger and bulkier, which I like. I have used it to adjust my eyeglasses, cut up food items at work for lunch, help skin moose and caribou, cut limbs from trees, fix various ATV and snow machine engines, clean my fingernails, file down all manner of metal objects, twist, tighten, or loosen innumerable nuts from bolts, skin out fur-bearing animals, and probably more things I'm forgetting than I could ever hope to list on this episode. It is decidedly a multi-tool in every possible sense, and I'm thankful every day it was invented. That said, what's the history on that? Multi-tools of a sort actually date back to Roman times. The famous Swiss Army knife was probably the first modern iteration. It got its start in the late 1800s with a tool that was created for, wait for it, the Swiss Army, that included in its arsenal a knife blade, reamer, can opener, and screwdriver. The first batch totaled 15,000 and was delivered in October of 1891. Leatherman specifically, and there are so many companies that make a similar tool these days, were first sold in 1983 when the Pocket Survival Tool, as it was first called, was created by Tim Leatherman. Well, the name had to come from somewhere, right? The first versions were considered too large for the pocket, so they came with a belt pouch, like many still do today. Something I use my Leatherman for, a lot in the summer, is to grab the hook to release a caught fish. Something I did quite a bit during that American Heritage Girls campout back in June. The needle-nosed plier part of the tool lends itself well to that task. The tool on the other end of that transaction, the fish hook, is an invention it's just almost impossible to imagine life without, isn't it? People have been using fish-catching devices at the ends of their line for thousands of years. Heck, they're even mentioned in the Bible. Job 41:1 states, "Can you draw out Leviathan without a fish hook?" Most of those early hooks were made of materials such as hardwoods, bone, shells, and even stones. The modern steel fish hook began to be more commonplace across Europe in the 1600s and, like most items, has continued to evolve and improve. Again, it's kind of hard to imagine a life without fish hooks, isn't it? I got my fishing start so many long years ago on a bamboo cane pole with which I fished for Kansas bluegills. You know, all these years later and I still occasionally miss fishing with a cane pole. There are any number of fishing rod inventions that have made fishing easier. I'm going to name one that makes my life easier, and will again in the coming weeks, the Ugly Stick. The Ugly Stick is an incredibly durable fishing rod manufactured by the Shakespeare Company. For many fishing purists, Ugly Sticks probably do not evoke warm, fuzzy feelings. I say that they make my job easier because I use them for the high school float camp that I do for the refuge. They are magnificent rods for teaching kids in remote areas that can test gear. The rod was created in the mid-1900s using a new manufacturing process called the Howald process, named for its creator, Dr. Arthur Howald. The early rods were dubbed wonder rods, and while durable, weren't very pretty. The same process is still used today, though better materials are used. The ugly stick as we know it came into being in 1976, and today's rods, while bearing the name, are actually very decent-looking rods, and, in my humble opinion, very good bang for the buck. Over the summer, I've been doing a fair number of presentations about archery, and that will continue with the float camp. Also, I'm thinking about trying to caribou hunt this fall with a bow. I'm partial to archery. A bow is just a lot of fun to shoot and hunt with. In sharing with students about archery, I tell them bows can be grouped into three basic categories: longbows, recurves, and compounds. Longbows are what you see in Hollywood depictions such as Robin Hood or Game of Thrones. They are long and straight when not strung up. Recurves are somewhat shorter and have limbs that curve back at the tips, hence the name. Recurves are a bit more efficient. That is, they impart more energy to the arrow than longbows. What recurves and longbows share is a single string and the fact that the draw weight is fully felt. That is, if you have a 50-pound bow, at full draw you feel all 50 pounds, which can make them difficult to shoot for beginners. Enter Hollis Wilbur Allen. Allen changed the face of archery as we know it when he invented the compound bow, a process that took a lot of trial and error in the 1960s. Allen was a mechanic and had a knack for mechanical things. He was also a deer hunter who was sometimes frustrated with the bows of his time. He decided he could build a better bow and set out to do just that. He began by sawing off part of the limbs to a recurve bow. He then attached pulleys to the ends. He had concluded that a pulley's mechanical advantage would allow for a stronger bow design. While experimenting with pulleys, he discovered by offsetting the pulleys, called eccentrics, it allowed for draw weight let off, the single biggest advantage to a compound bow. What that discovery meant, and still means, is that a compound bow shooter at full draw only feels a fraction of the total bow weight. His bow design allowed shooters to draw less weight, shoot a more powerful bow, and use lighter arrows. On June 23, 1966, Allen applied for a patent that was titled Archery Bow with Draw Force Multiplying Attachments. The patent was granted 3 years later, in 1969. Soon after, he joined with successful bow manufacturer Tom Jennings, and the first compound bows began to hit the market. And just what did that mean for archery, and what does it still mean today? The vast majority of bows sold and used today are compound bows. They have changed in look so much over the years, but the principle that was discovered and put into play by Wilbur Allen is still very much the same. A compound bow, simply put, is an easier, more efficient tool to use for those who choose to participate in archery. A newcomer to the sport with a decent bow, matching arrows, and a mechanical sight can, in very, very little time, become a proficient shooter. In a very real way, compound bows revolutionized archery. Allen passed away in 1979. I'm betting he would be utterly amazed to see how far his idea has developed over the past several decades. By the way, if you've never seen Allen's first bow, Google it. It may have revolutionized archery, but that first model could easily have been marketed as the ugly bow. Just saying. On the subject of hunting, the last half century or so has seen great gains in the way of better bullets for ammunition. Certainly there are several fairly recent bullet types that have been invented that have had a huge impact on hunting. Two that come to mind are the Nosler Partition and the Barnes All-Copper Triple Shock. Ironically, the men behind both bullets had their epiphanies about the need for a better bullet while hunting Alaskan species. John Nosler came up with the Partition bullet after a moose hunt in Canada in 1946. The bullets he was using failed to meet his expectations, fueling his desire to find something better, which led to him creating the now famous Partition bullet. Likewise, Randy Brooks, the owner of the Barnes Bullet Company, was pondering a tougher, better bullet while hunting brown bears in Alaska in 1985. That led him to create the all-copper Barnes X bullet. In 1986, he shot a brown bear with a prototype, the first big game animal to be taken with one. 3 years later, in 1989, the Barnes X hit the market. Again, both bullet types, as inventions go, have had a huge impact on hunting in recent decades. An episode like this could go on for a very long time. Cameras, laser rangefinders, the materials used for camping gear, advancements in outboard engines, The list goes on, and it will continue to grow as new things are added or displace current items in the years to come. For pretty much anything that you can do that requires a tool to do it, someone's always trying to build a better mousetrap. Periodically they succeed, and our outdoor pursuits are sometimes better for it. For Field Notes, I'm Terry Fuller. Music from Loon Echo Lake provided courtesy of Solitudes at www.solitudes.com.